That'll put us in a position where we have two operating mines, Lost Creek and Shirley Basin. Lost Creek is licensed at 1.2 million pounds per year. Shirley Basin is licensed at 1 million pounds per year. So when we bring Shirley Basin on, that'll not quite double, but nearly double our production capacity between those two facilities. It also gives us great diversity.
I'm Cash, your energy. Good morning to you. How are you?
Hey, doing great. Good to catch up with you, Andy, and Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you. I want to just really welcome you on this, and I'd love to hear really about what you guys going on right now in 2025. But actually, yeah, let's start with there any news that you can share with us, and let's then jump into the projects that you have going on.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think what I'd like to highlight is our Shirley Basin project. We continue to make great progress building that project out. It's an in-situ mine in Wyoming, just south of Casper. And last year in 2024, we did a lot of work, prep work for construction, had power lines installed, the site's hot, roads are in, all the monitor wells are in. We've done our pump test. We were doing injection tests now. That's something that historically we've not done, but we believe that'll help us with engineering design going forward. And we'll wrap that up this week. And before too long here, when the weather breaks, probably around April here in Wyoming, we will begin working on the foundation for the satellite plant. We've been already working on refurbing some existing buildings in an effort to keep costs down, but we are full steam ahead on Shirley Basin, and that project is moving along extremely well. So we're excited to talk about that. And of course, we continue to ramp up our production at our Lost Creek project, which is our older in-situ project that we've had here in Wyoming. It's been in operation since 2013. So really, we're operations focused in 24. We're going to continue that in 25 with construction and producing pounds. Right now, we are the leading U.S. producer. We're producing more pounds than any of our peers, and we're going to work hard to maintain that status.
Yeah, I want to push on that. I'm the leading U.S. producer here. That's a great place to be. You're cash flowing a lot of money. But I want to talk a little bit more about the Shirley Basin project here. Give me some ETAs. You mentioned just really the end of the week. What are some other significant ETAs that investors or prospective investors need to keep a lookout on the radar for in 2025? Just take me through the year.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, like I said, we'll begin construction in earnest on the satellite building around April.
In April.
For the foundation, we already have the ion exchange columns mostly built. So those will be delivered to the site. We expect to complete construction of Shirley Basin in December. Once construction is complete, we're required by law to do a pre-ops inspection. Once that inspection is done, we expect to very quickly thereafter begin ramping up production at Shirley Basin. So to turn the pumps on, we're looking at late December, early January timeframe. So late 25, early 26, to begin pushing that forward. We have all of the permits in place, 100% permitted, and just waiting on finalization of construction. A lot of those critical parts that we need that we know have long lead items, they've all been ordered, and we believe we can meet that timeline.
Yeah, that's pretty aggressive, but it's music to my ears if I'm a per and I am a prospective investor here. So, what's that going to do to the companies once that comes online? What's that going to do to the company's production, if you would, annual production?
Yeah, so that'll put us in a position where we have two operating mines, Lost Creek and Shirley Basin. Lost Creek is licensed at 1.2 million pounds per year. Shirley Basin is licensed at 1 million pounds per year. So when we bring Shirley Basin on, that'll not quite double, but nearly double our production capacity between those two facilities. It also gives us great diversity. Both mines are in Wyoming, but they're in different basins, different geographies. They're about 110 miles apart. So one of the things we look forward to is just reducing all types of risk because of that diversity of production, technical risk, regulatory, environmental risk. So it's nice to be spreading out, growing the company's portfolio across Wyoming. Wyoming is a fantastic place to be working. It's a sophisticated regulatory regime that we work under. Our regulators have been around for a long time. The regulations have been around for a long time, and it's now an agreement state. It has been for a few years now. So a lot of the permitting and the oversight that we go through is at a local level, not at a federal level. So when we want to speak to a regulator, all we have to do is go down to Cheyenne to talk to them instead of going all the way to White Flint over by Washington, D.C. So it's a great regulatory regime, tremendous public support. We are starting hiring right now, and we've received a lot of resumes. People who are familiar with our story know that in Wyoming, the workforce is pretty stressed. There's not much labor out there available. The unemployment rate's incredibly low. But as expected, as we move into Shirley Basin and we put that shingle out, say, hey, we're hiring, we've had a great response. And we believe that it's going to be a lot easier to fill those roles at Shirley Basin than it has been at other mines throughout the state and throughout the U.S.
Excellent. Okay. And you mentioned a key word that I like to hear is de-risking here. So going into production with Shirley Basin, it sounds like it's going to almost double your production. Again, music to my ears as a prospective investor. De-risking, again, going in production, fantastic. But also, I'm curious about growth. Again, you just doubled the production. So just humor me for a minute. What are the plans for more growth? Are you looking at other projects in and around or Wyoming or across the U.S.? Or are you drilling more, or is there production you can ramp up more on those and explore more on those properties?
Yeah, I appreciate that question because it's not something we speak about a lot. At UR Energy, we commonly speak about Lost Creek. We speak about Shirley Basin, but we really don't delve into the pipeline very much. So two or three things to hit here. Number one, at Lost Creek in particular, there's tremendous room for growth. A lot of the mineralized roll fronts have not been drilled out laterally or at depth. And for the listeners, if they want to check out our technical report on Lost Creek, it's available on our website. I just go to Tech Reports, top center icon, pull it down. But pull up the maps, and we provide the investors an opportunity to look at where the roll fronts are compared to the drilling. And you can quickly recognize, hey, there's a lot more opportunity here to grow Lost Creek through exploration. So we're looking to spend a little bit of money in 2025 to grow the resource at Lost Creek. We're working through the budgeting process right now, so I don't have numbers quite yet, but we are aiming to do that because we're producing. We need to replace those pounds, keep the project on an even keel with us with regard to our resources. Shirley Basin, there may be some opportunity to grow that project, not so much through brownfield exploration, perhaps through some acquisition of some properties in the area. We're always looking for that. But beyond that, we're looking at Lost Soldier. That's a project that we've had in our portfolio for many, many years. We've got several geologists working on that now. In 2025, we hope to make a decision on that, whether that's something we want to produce or something we want to continue to hold on to. But there's considerable resource there. And beyond that, we have a number of other exploration projects in Shirley Basin, in the Great Divide Basin, both in Wyoming. And so looking to put a little bit of money into the ground this year to do some exploration, start developing those stories so we can speak about that to the public.
Got it. So you're kind of, and I mean this with a high amount of admiration as well as respect. I want all of our listeners to know that I'm not an investor. I am a prospective investor, and that you have not paid for this interview. I want to be very clear about that. That being said, what I'm always concerned about for an explorer is maintaining shareholder value. And you seem like you're in a sweet spot right here. We have all of this, you have a tremendous amount of production already. You have more production coming online. And yet you also want to explore, again, music to my ears. But my question is how do you finance that exploration? Is that through shares, issuing shares and dilution, or would that be internally here through the company's revenues?
So last year, 2024, we did do an equity raise that put us in a really strong position coming into 2025. We've not released numbers for fourth quarter yet, but for third quarter, end of third quarter, we had $110 million in cash. And so we're going to use that money to continue the ramp up of production at Lost Creek and the build out at Shirley Basin. But we also should have sufficient funds there to finance some exploration. One of the great things about exploration for roll front type deposits in Wyoming is the drilling is relatively inexpensive. So we've got some great drillers. In fact, we've got about 20 drill rigs on site right now. Probably we'll add a couple of more here in the near term to really round that out. But we've got the money on hand to do exploration. We've got the drill rigs. We've got the geologists. Right now, we've got 9 geologists on staff. We've got the logging trucks in-house. So we can do pretty much all of this on our own without going outside to rely on other entities to do that. So yeah, we've got the people, got the money, got the equipment, and excited to deploy some of that this year. Drill cost, very roughly, we're looking at around $4,000 a drill hole for an open exploration hole in Wyoming. Very inexpensive. For those of your listeners who are more involved in copper or gold exploration, you know, those drill holes can easily be $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000. That's not like our space. We're drilling in really soft rock. We use simply rotary mud, so the costs are very low. And that's how we find ore bodies is through the drill bit.
Got it. So let's talk a little bit about the stock price as well as the price of uranium. Obviously, we are not forecasters here. We don't have a crystal ball here, but I'll just share with you my experience. Your uranium had such a great run-up going through memory from, I want to say, July of 23 through really the springtime of 24. It just was a massive run-up. And then really a lot of the big players participate in that, but a lot of the smaller companies did not. And just recently, they've gotten hammered. My question is, what is your take on that? Why the smaller companies, even producers, got hammered? And then it seems like an opportunity. I'm not saying that as a recommendation, but just my own intuition as an investor, that looks like an opportunity for me. But I'd love your thoughts about that. And then project the price of uranium with everything that's going on out in the world, as well as all of the new nuclear plants that are being built and all of that sort of thing.
Yeah. No, great question. Unfortunately, I don't have a crystal ball either. So we like to speculate and sit here and pontificate on where we think things are going to go. But reality is I don't. But there are some things that are worth noting. I mean, as you pointed out, the price has come up very nicely, really beginning in 22. The initial increase in price was really, I think, a growing recognition globally that if we're serious about reducing carbon emissions, there's really no option but to go nuclear. Wind and solar are great. They have their place, but they typically are higher cost. They're not always easy to deploy. Sun goes down at night and the wind does stop blowing. Even here in Wyoming, the wind doesn't stop all the time. There's some windmills north of town here that very often are not turning in the morning when I go to work. So people are looking for reliable base load, but at the same time, they want that carbon free. So that's really, I think, what began to drive the price. People wanted more and more nuclear power around the world. We've had a couple of new reactors come on here in the U.S. A lot of people don't recognize that, but Southern Company, Vogtle Units 3 and 4. That discussion, along with small modular reactors, we expect them to start coming online maybe around 2030. We're going to see some growing and increasingly significant demand for fuel for those. Then you layer in on top of that the big data needs for carbon-free baseload power. And they really need baseload. They can't be turning those data centers up and down or those Bitcoin miners up and down on a whim. They have got to have steady electron flow to keep those up and running so people can utilize the systems. And so you've seen a number of big time contracts lately between nuclear power and big data. And those are real. Those are not something that we're looking at, you know, 5, 10, 15 years in the future. Those are contracts that are being provided into today. China, massive growth there. So you've got that fundamental demand growth. Then you throw in on top of that the geopolitics. And what I'm speaking of here is really Russia, their invasion of Ukraine. Russia is a major refiner of uranium. They also are a significant miner, but not in Russia. They have a lot of projects that they have significant ownership in Kazakhstan, where nearly half of the world's uranium is mined. So we are, as a result of the war, it was a chilling relationship between the East and the West, U.S., Russia, China, and the Western world. We're beginning to see more and more of a bifurcated market. Many times when we speak to utility fuel buyers, they say, we really want U.S. production, Canadian or Australian production. we have to maintain relationships in Kazakhstan and the eastern part of the world because they supply so much. You can't ignore that, but we need to diversify into the Western world. So the contracts we've signed, several of them, we received a nice premium because we're a U.S. producer. So going forward, price prediction. Don't want to predict a price. I don't want to be in that business. We are going to see volatility. We're going to see ups and downs. I do expect to continue to see an increasing bifurcation in the East and West market. If I'm right on that, I think it's going to be difficult for the West to keep up with production of yellowcake, the feedstock, conversion, and enrichment. So I think the entire fuel cycle will continue to be stressed. And I think we're going to see solid pricing for each of those for the foreseeable future. One of the challenges in the nuclear space is it's very difficult to ramp up production in any part of the fuel cycle, mining, conversion, and enrichment. You don't just flip a switch and bring that on very quickly. There's intensive long permitting that's required, significant capital expenditure, significant technical experience that right now the world is short on. So there are a lot of big hurdles that have to be jumped. So are we going to see any of those sectors in the fuel cycle have a big response in the next year or two? And you'll close the gap between supply and demand? No, we're not. It's going to take many years, and a lot of projects that we don't even know about yet. Even if you bring on all of the big projects that are being talked about globally, it's probably not enough to fill the gap. So we got to make discovery. We got to get permitted. We got to get built out in the Western world. So short answer to your question is more pressure on the market going forward.
Hey, can I, you made a comment and you might not be able to answer me and that's fine, but I do want to ask the question. You made a comment about 2 minutes ago about you were signed contracts, and I'm aware that companies don't sell uranium at the spot price. Can you comment about what price is around a price point that you signed those contracts at, which is, I think, key for investors?
Yeah. No, so we've announced 6 contracts that we've signed. What we've tried to do historically in our company, and it served us really well, and more recently, is we try to layer in some baseload revenue by signing some long-term contracts. So right now, a little over half of our production capacity for the coming years is booked up. That includes Lost Creek and Shirley Basin as it comes online. The earlier contracts we started signing in 2022, obviously that was lower pricing then because the price of uranium was lower, but we did get a nice bonus there from our customers because they wanted U.S. production. So they paid a little bit extra for those pounds. So 2024, I don't have an exact number, but I'm going to be very close here. We're going to be around $60 a pound. That number is going to escalate quickly. Because the additional contracts we've signed, we are looking at more hybrid contracts instead of base load escalated. Now we're looking at a hybrid between base load escalated plus spot. Both the spot and the base, they have, the spot has a floor and a ceiling on it, and that escalates with an inflation factor going forward. So we expect in the coming years, in today's dollars, not in escalated dollars, but in today's dollars, to be selling uranium under those contracts in the $80 mark. If you throw in inflation, we don't know where that goes, but maybe that takes us up to $90, $95 a pound that we can average. It just depends on the inflation provision. So that's our theory, our philosophy. We'd like to put in that base load. We still have room. We're being very careful on contracting going forward because we do believe there will be some significant opportunity coming forward. Especially from the U.S. government, the DOE has got a program on LEU and HALEU. So enrichers are involved in that, and there's a preference for those enrichers under that program to buy U.S. production. And so as the largest U.S. producer, we produce more pounds than anybody in the U.S., we stand by ready to sell into those programs. One thing that's really worth pointing out to the listeners is there are really two markets here in the uranium space. One's called spot, and that's really not a contract base. It's just someone says, hey, I've got some pounds to sell. Someone raises their hand and says, hey, I'll buy them here in the short term. They agree with price, and that's the transaction. Versus long-term, which typically is a contract that's signed, and it can cover anywhere from maybe 3 years to 10 or maybe even longer than that. It's important for people to understand that the spot market can be frothy. It's exciting. It's what people really watch. But the reality is it's only a very small part of the overall market. And it typically is not where the utilities play. The utilities tend to play in the long-term market, which is 85%, give or take, of the market versus the spot, which is only about 15%. Spot market, that tends to be the home of commodity traders, bankers, hedge funds, that type of transaction. That's an important component. It's critical to our space, but it's very small and it's different players. And people should recognize that froth and excitement there, sometimes it is a leading indicator of where the long-term price is going to go, but it's not where the utilities play. And it's typically not where we play. There are other companies, mining companies that play there. Typically, we like the long-term stability of high-priced contracts, lock some of that in, protect the company for good revenue. And let me go back to the early years of the company. Started production in 2013. We signed up some really good long-term contracts. We made some really good money on those long-term contracts, despite the spot market and the long-term market going up and down and down, especially after Fukushima. We had those locked in, and despite the published price, we were selling pounds according to contracts that we had signed years before. So it protected the company. We survived on those largely through the fall of 2020. And so we didn't have to go out and do massive dilution to our shareholders in those years because we had those good contracts. So do we give up a little blue sky? Yes, we do. But do we protect the company from that volatility and markets that we know don't always go up? Markets, you know, they go up, they come down. And so we take that strategy of protecting the company.
So I'm really glad that you brought that up. And a lot of people are confused about that because they'll just Google. And I mean, this is what I do. I'll Google the current price of uranium or whatever, and it'll give me, I don't know, $72 a pound or whatever, or $100 a pound or whatever. And I would say, and this is me, not John talking, I would say that's misleading, because especially in dealing with somebody, a producer like yourself, or even a junior that's not producing and prospecting, that number is not really at all, very little related to their revenues. Because today, it's what you locked in, whether that's 1, 2, 3, 5, 10 years ago. And so really what I'm talking about, what I'm interested in, is what are your revenues and what your cash flow is right now, as well as the next 12 to 24 months. And you answer that question. You're looking at $66 a pound, and then with the floor of 80 to pound for, I'm paraphrasing here, to $90 to $95 a pound. Again, these are rough numbers. That's what you're communicating to me, correct?
Yeah. I mean, early on, the long-term contracts like 2024 around 60, those contracts continue on with escalators. So those like grow. And then the last three contracts we've signed are more of the hybrids with floors and ceilings on the spot. So it's hard to predict pricing on those because there are some moving parts. So I don't want to get too far into that, but we have some really strong floors and some really strong ceilings that allow us to have exposure to that spot market. If it gets hot, hotter, it's still pretty hot. People don't recognize that. It's still pretty hot. But even if it goes down, we've got a nice strong floor that we're profitable at. And so we'll have some good revenues locked in. For 2024, we've announced this before. We pretty well know what the revenue is because we're under contract. So 2024, the revenue is going to be right at $33 million. That, of course, will come up in 2025 because the pricing comes up, but also the quantity that we deliver into contracts comes up as well. 2025, right now, it looks like we'll be delivering about 740,000 pounds into contract.
Got it. Also, this is me talking, not John talking, but if I could only add my 2 cents here in negotiating with these contracts here, the company typically has a lot of leverage over the utilities. And I want to say that with all due respect to the people that are buying. So it's the companies that have a tremendous amount of leverage in this. So that's music to my ears as well as an investor. John, you're on trade on the New York Stock Exchange. That's fantastic. And you also traded on the TSX. give me your tickers. Give me where your website address where people can look for you. I'll put all of this in the show notes below, but give me all of that information.
Yeah, TSX, we're listed under URE. Under the New York American, we're under URE. Our website is very easy to find, www.ur-energy.com. Wonderful website. Really encourage people to go and take a look at that. We are an extremely transparent company. We have tech reports for Lost Creek and Shirley Basin, includes economics. We review those annually to see if they need to be updated to take into account changes in cost, inflation, things like that. So they are very fresh. Our quarterlies are extremely transparent as well. We're very proud of that. You can very easily see what our cost of production is on a mine site basis. And you can also see what's going on with the company. So would encourage people to take a look.
And for all of our listeners out there, I'm not volunteering you, John, that you're going to answer an email, but John was very accessible and your company was very accessible to us. So thank you for that. John, I want to thank you so much for coming on. I'm going to put everything in the show notes below and would love to have you on again soon.
Really good. Thanks, Andy. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.